Hi, Dan. Well, we're tight on flag time, so without further ado, let's press into our first bunch of slides here. So get your slide projector ready, and we'll get ready for slide number one. The first batch of these slides was taken up at Kern's Ground, and that's where this particular shot was taken. This was my taken through my tent front, actually looking out towards some of the other tents in the area there. In the area down at Kern's Ground, and if you'll recall, an earlier picture I was standing in the mud while it was right near the front of this particular tent. Slide number 2. This is a shot of a UH-1B called the Huey. You've heard me refer to the Hueys in my letters, and this is the backbone of the Army Helicopter Force. They have probably several thousand of these in the Army Aviation branch, and this particular model here is called a Flick. Now, I think maybe I've mentioned Flicks before. The reason they call it a Flick is that it has no armament on it. It has no guns or anything. This particular one is used strictly for carrying troops back and forth to the combat areas. And of course, they go in and haul out some of our wounded, and they also haul cargo, food, ammunition, things like this back and forth to the front line. So, as you can see, these choppers have really revolutionized our fighting over here. And we have great mobility, the ability to move our forces very rapidly, and also to keep our forces well supplied. This is the big advantage that we have over the French when they were here, since they didn't have any such thing when they were fighting. This picture was also taken in the Kern's Ground area. Slide number 3. This is a sort of a long distance shot of the 101st Airborne area there at Kern's Ground. And you'll notice in the background there's a caravan taking off. It's just, and you're looking towards the south there, if you're interested. I know you are, aren't you, Don? Anyway, you can see that it's fairly green, although this is the beginning of the dry season, and it hasn't had a chance to dry out too much. But I imagine it's quite a bit browner than that right now in that particular area. Slide number 4. This is a picture of a caribou. We call it the C7A. That's the Air Force designation of it. And this is sitting over on one of the parking areas at the ramp there at Kern's Ground. It's one of the backbones of our cargo hauling fleet. The big advantage of it being that it can land on a very short landing strip. They can put these things in about, I think they need about 2,000 feet of runway. They'll be able to bring them in fully loaded or take them out fully loaded. And they can even do better than that. I've seen them land and come to a full stop in less than 1,000 feet. And considering the size of this airplane and the weight and everything, it's really quite remarkable. It was originally, this aircraft belonged to the Army. And in an agreement just recently why the Air Force took over all of these aircraft and are now fully in charge of the cargo hauling capacity in country. Now, we have several of these come into our area every day, and they bring everything from ice and food to hauling out prisoners and wounded, and it's just amazing all the stuff they carry. Slide number 5. This is a shot of the runway at Kern's Ground. It's kind of a steel planking. Now, this isn't the true PSP because it isn't a pierced steel planking. It's kind of a corrugated steel planking. You'll notice that the runway is fairly sharply crowned so that we don't have a drainage problem. All the runways over here are pretty well crowned like that so that we don't have water standing on this steel, because as you know, that would be very slick, and this stuff is pretty slick when it's wet anyway. But it would really be quite dangerous if we had any water standing on it. The runway we have here at Duck Fall now has a new type of anti-skid substance on it, and it's a much improved runway also. It's a new form of planking which doesn't have the corrugated bit, so it's a lot smoother too. It's kind of like a bunch of steel, smooth sections, and it's kind of got a real rough surface on it. And what I mean by smooth is that it isn't corrugated, but it does have this kind of a sticky substance on it to keep the aircraft from slipping when it gets wet. Anyway, this is looking north down the runway at Kern's Ground. This runway is about 3,000 feet long. All of our runways that we build for our organization here are a minimum of 3,000 feet because this is what the C-130s require. And a large part of our air supply is done by the C-130s. And of course, they're just enough larger that they do need the extra runway. In fact, it's rather amazing that something that large can come in on that shorter runway. And they kind of pound up our steel planking a little bit when they land, but it's sure nice to have around because they can bring in a lot of goodies, including mail. Slide number 6. This is a picture of yours truly, and I'm standing there by my faithful bird dog, and this is taken on the ramp there at Taj Mahal. And I'll try and explain a little bit about all the garbage I've got on there. Sitting beside the tire there is our map case. It's a leather bag, and we carry all of our maps in there, which are many. We have all different scales. We have 1 to 50,000 maps. We have 1 to 250,000. And all the different scales of maps that we need. Also, in that case, I carry a couple extra clips of ammunition for my pop gun there. And I also carry an extra battery for my survival radio and also a flashlight. So there's all kinds of little goodies in there. Also, we have in there a little booklet with all of our call signs, frequencies, and things that we need to work with the Army. And of course, this stuff is all very highly classified as far as the VCOG is concerned, so we keep this bag with us all the time. In my left hand there, I have what's called the AR-15. This is an improved version of the M-16. It has a different type of muzzle blast. What would you say? It's a new design on the muzzle, which cuts down on the muzzle blast. And of course, it's a very high velocity bullet. It's up around 3,500 feet per second. So you do get a lot of muzzle blast. And this is a real nice, just a honey of a weapon. It's small, light, very accurate, and it really carries a punch. This is the gun that Charlie calls the little gun with that makes a big hole. The reason he says this is that this bullet, when it hits the body, it starts tumbling, and when it comes out the other side, it just tears a guy all to heck. It's been known to tear a guy's arm completely off, just one shell. Real powerful little gun. We carry these with us all the time, and we are normally not called on to fire these out the window or anything, but we would if we had to protect another fat gun shot down maybe, or to try and keep a position from being overrun if we ran out of rockets or ran out of any other means of defending. Actually, it's mainly for a survival weapon, though, for us in case that we would have to put down in an enemy area. We carry one clip in the gun. I think you can probably see it there. Okay, of course, I'm holding my helmet in my right hand, and I'm wearing the standard Army-type cap. You'll notice that all of my rank and everything, we use what's called a subdued lettering. It's a black letters and black rank, and it's sewn on to our uniforms. The particular uniform I'm wearing there is the new Army Jungle Fatigues. It's a trouser shirt type setup. It's a blouse that you wear loose on the outside. Of course, they're also designed so that you can wear the sleeves rolled up, which everybody does, except at night. At night, we have a saying around here, sundown, sleeves down. And that is because of the mosquitoes. So we roll our sleeves down at night to keep those mosquitoes from biting us. Anyway, they're real nice. They're sort of a Dacro material, very light. And they, if you get them wet, they dry out real easily. And so they're real good for the guys in the field, which is what they were actually designed for. And we like them too, so we wear them quite a bit. We are issued them, so they're really no money out to us at all. We can pick up as many pairs as we want. And of course, we run through a lot of them since we perspire pretty heavily over here. Around my waist, of course, I'm wearing the Army-type web pistol belt. And I don't know if you can see my pistol on the right there. It's a 38 Special Smith & Wesson. And a real fine little pistol, and I carry some extra rounds for it in my survival vest. I carry tracers in this pistol, and if I run out of rockets or something at night, I can always use that to mark the target by shooting tracers at the target. This is one way of using it, and of course it's also a survival weapon. And then right behind the pistol, where you probably can't see, I have a survival knife. It's a big, heavy type, regular Air Force Sensen survival knife. And then on the left side, I've got my canteen. And of course, the one most important thing to us, if we get shot down, next to our weapon and our radio, which is, the radio is really the most important, and after that comes water. And most guys that have any experience any shock said that if you just got to have that water, you're not going to be good to anybody. And of course, on a 3-hour flight, it's nice to have a little water to sip on there anyway, so I always keep a canteen full of water. Okay, then outside of the next thing I've got on, outside the shirt, and it's kind of hanging down there almost to my waist, is a survival vest. Now, this vest has all kinds of goodies in it, and I won't begin to list all of them, but it's got all the things that we really need as far as escape and evasion is concerned. It has blood chests that we can barter to the natives. It has a plastic-type map of the whole area, and it shows all the special forces camps. And we have little kits that have candy and sugar pills and stuff like that. It's got water purification tablets, needle and thread, all kinds of little goodies like that. And then, of course, we also have a signal mirror and flares and the all-important survival radio, which is a UHF-type radio. And I just can't begin to name it all, but anyway, there's a lot of goodies in there, and that's man's best friend. Okay, and then on top of that, on the outside, that sort of bulky-looking thing is my flak vest. You know, I don't have that particular type anymore. I now have a new type of flak vest. This was the old type that were used, and they weren't as effective. The new ones we have now have a ceramic plating in them, and this stuff is very, very strong, and it takes a real high-caliber bullet to get through them. In fact, we've had a few chopper guys hit, and the bullets haven't got through so far, so we're real happy with them. And anyway, that completes my arrangement there. So it's a little bulky and a little hot, but it's all well worth wearing since it's all good to keep us flying. And then there's the good old bird dog in the background. Real fine airplane for the job. We like it very much. You'll notice just above my head on the wings are two of the four rockets. We carry two on each side. These are what we call Willie Pete. That's just kind of an abbreviation for the WP. Actually stands for White Phosphorus. And of course, that's the type of rockets we fire. They make a large white cloud of smoke, and actually the White Phosphorus itself is quite lethal if it hits near anything. But mainly we use them just to mark the target with. These, you'll notice the red flag ring down there. Those are safety pins which actually keep the rockets from contacting the electrical firing mechanism. So as long as those pins are in, there is no possibility of the rockets firing. And of course, we always keep the pins in on the ground, and they're pulled just before we take off. These new aircraft, the O2s that we're getting, are going to carry two pods, which will actually contain seven of these rockets in each one. So that'll give us a little more of a capability. And sometimes we find that in order to mark the target properly for the fighters, we use up more than these four rockets. And we also carry some little hand-type smoke rockets, or smoke grenades, actually, that are hung on the back of the seat. We just pull a pin on them and drop them out the window. However, these are kind of slow. They're not very accurate also, and they're not too desirable for most situations. And also, you have to get closer to the target if you're going to mark it accurately, and sometimes we don't like to get that close. So the having the extra rockets around will be nice. If you're wondering what that sort of a black bump is sticking up on the fuselage there behind the cockpit, that's a UHF antenna. It's one of our radio antennas. You'll also see another whip-type antenna that comes up out of the top of the roof there, right near the canopy, up on top of the wing. As you know, we've got a lot of radios in here. We have Fox Mike, which is FM. We have VHF and UHF. So we have a lot of radio equipment. In fact, one of our biggest problems with these airplanes is keeping the radios going. The airplane itself is very dependable, and we have very little trouble with it. But the radios tend to be quite a problem sometimes. Well, I guess I've killed enough time with this one, and I'll press on to the next slide. I get kind of carried away here. This is my favorite subject. Okay, slide number 7. Now, this is another shot of the kid And the Colts are going to get a few shots at me there, and I said, okay, well, I'll ham it up a little and show it to my fans back home. So this is just another picture of the same setup. Slide number 8. This is another shot, just a little different angle this time. A gung-ho picture there, a kid climbing into the cockpit. This is actually a real awkward affair getting into this airplane. Once you're set, you're in pretty good position even for us long-legged guys, but getting in tends to be a real chore, and you feel like a sort of an eight-legged octopus trying to get in there sometimes, especially with all the garbage on it you've got. There you do have a better shot of my pistol there. It looks like the whole tuck's out of the west, huh? I'm getting to feel real at home with that pistol. Here in the area here with Air Force Oregon, we only quite aware steel parts and the pistols at all times. So I can't leave this tent without having that pistol on. And I feel just like the cowboys, you know. I feel naked without my pistol anymore. Slide number 9. This is a picture of me with some mutton yard kids. This is right across the road from the runway, and this is sort of part of the village there that we do, that we call Conjuan. Now these kids are a little bit shy, and they weren't real gung-ho about getting their picture taken, but I did want to show you a little bit about what these kids look like. The mutton yards, as you know, are the mountain people that they're sort of almost like some of our Indian tribes, really. That's what I think of them as, anyway. They don't really look like the Vietnamese at all. Of course, the Vietnamese consider them as being sort of barbaric, but actually, they're independent, and they're you can't call them friendly, but at the same time, they don't, they're not backbiting. They're much more trustworthy in their own way than the Vietnamese are. Now, this is a typical village, also. You notice the fat striped roofs in the background. And I might point out here that these people have really learned how to live in this heat. Now, this is the coolest type of structure over here. It's much cooler in our tents, by the way. It sheds water very well, and yet you notice by building these things up off the ground, they get air circulating underneath the floor, so they don't have the big problem with the heat on off the ground. They also have the ends of them open, so they get good circulation from the breeze, and surprisingly, inside these things, it's quite cool. It's also quite smelly. We ventured in a couple of them. Of course, the hogs and cows and things, everything go walking right through the houses, too, and nobody really cares, and I think they don't even bother to go outside to urinate half the time, so as you can well imagine, it's pretty messy. These people live almost like the animals. It's kind of grim. Some of these kids learn just a few words of English being around the soldiers for a long time, and they become quite enterprising. They go down and try and sell you a bottle of their local pap, and if you think you've got a strong stomach, well, you can go ahead and try it. And they go out and beg candy off the troops, and of course they usually get some. They're real cute little kids, and you kind of feel sorry for the way they're living, but of course they don't know anything different, so I guess it's no real problem for them anyway. Okay, slide number 10. This is a shot of a little tobacco plant that the mountain yards had near the village there. Also another picture of one of their typical homes, quote. And I guess you might say that this is a very standard pastoral scene out here in the what we call the Happy Valley country up there around Conjuan. Notice the intricate little board fence that he's made to keep the hogs and cows out of his tobacco. Clever, huh? Slide number 11. This is another shot in Conjuan Village. And there's some more mutton yard kids. And they're kind of staring at me, wondering what in the hell I'm doing taking their pictures. And you'll notice the ever-present dogs. Everybody has a dog around here. Some of us feel that the main reason is so that they have some kind of warning. They have so much of a problem, of course, and have had for so many years with the VC raiding their villages. And the dogs warn them of people sneaking up. So everybody seems to have dogs around. I don't know, maybe they just love dogs, but we tend to feel that it's kind of a self-preservation thing. You really see a lot of them, and they're all cars. I haven't seen anything that looked like it was a pure strain of anything. I think these dogs have been bred for thousands of years over here. Anyway, you'll notice the way they weave their mats that they make the walls with on these huts. And also, this is a better shot showing you how they build them up off the ground. Also, in the rainy season, this serves the function of keeping you high and dry out of the mud. So they're really not so dumb when it comes to building these houses. This is the most practical way to solve the weather problem over here. Slide number 20. This is a picture of a Vietnamese woman, and we are now up at Duck Fo. This was taken right outside the Duck Fo area, actually right on the road that starts down towards our 101st Airborne area. This is right near the runway. And this particular jeep belongs to the cavalry. Now, the cavalry serves the function of escort for all of our convoys, and you'll notice this is the type of jeep that they do their escorting with. A guy stands in the back of the jeep and rides, I guess you'd say he rides shotgun, although this is actually a 60 millimeter. I stand corrected, it's an M60, which is a 7.62 millimeter submachine gun. It has a high rate of fire and is a real good defensive weapon for anybody that tries to strafe our convoys. You'll notice that the guys in these jeeps wear flak vests similar to the ones we have in the aircraft. And of course this is part of their protection and also helps protect them if they hit any mines. Now they are talking to a Vietnamese lady there who seems to be doing a little bit of bartering with them, probably for trying to sell them a watermelon or something, I don't know for sure. In the background there, you'll notice some rice paddies, and you'll be seeing some more in the shot. Now, this whole area is mainly rice paddies. This is one of the largest rice growing areas in I-Corps, right around Duck Fo here. I might point out that what this lady is wearing is very typical dress for the Vietnamese men and women. Our black is a real light kind of a silk material. Sandals and the big hat. Now the VC Charlies don't wear the hat usually because it shows up too easy. It's very easy to spot from the air, for instance. But you'll see them on all the local farmers here. Well, I think this slide's about to run out.